This is awesome. This is the first episode I've gotten to do in a public space.
Live your life, man.
Space. I'm alive in the world out here. Flight Coffee, Dover, New Hampshire. This is going to be the 9th episode, I believe, of this podcast, Mike in the Field. My name is Mike. I'm sitting here with owner of Flight Coffee, Mr. Kelly Bauer. Good to see you, sir.
Mike, always a pleasure to see you.
Man, it's strange to be sitting in the space that normally my gear would be sitting, and I'd be playing a show right here. But here we are. You know, the pandemic has put us in this spot, and we started a podcast, because why the fuck not, you know?
Like, I think the pandemic has given a lot of people new ways to communicate and share and create, especially artists. And so there are massive blessings in what's happened in the last 18 months.
Yeah, I mean, you were just kind of talking to me about what's been going on with you in terms of, like, big changes. And there's big changes that have gone on for me. And, what's the hell is with that? What happened? Why is, you know, this pandemic happens, you know, and... Why all of a sudden are people like you and I or other folks that I talk to all of a sudden starting to think a little bit more deeply about what they're doing? What?
How deep do you want to go?
How much caffeine and scones can you feed me?
Yeah. This is an awakening, I think, that people are going through. And some are and some aren't.
Right.
So, but, you know, critical thinking skills, just awareness of your life and the impact that you have on others and that others have on you, it's all heightened, right? And so for myself, I mean, I've become far more aware of my role in society.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact I'm here to help people. I'm here to help people ascend and become awake. And I've also learned it's not my role to tell them what to do or how to think.
Sure.
So it's a fine line, right? I think it's, you know, I'm not going to belittle any of the tragedy that's happened in the last 18 months at all. You know, it's hit home for me in a couple of ways. And I think all of us know, you know, a couple of people that have been affected. But, you know, absolutely. I am thankful that I had the opportunity to lead this business in the last 18 months. I think we've excelled and thrived instead of closed.
Sure.
We have run, I think, contrary to most small businesses and restaurants. And I think it's because of... The word positive is a tough one to use these days.
Sure.
But I think it's because of a really positive mental outlook, a state of mind. And as a leader of a business with, you know, humans that run it and work and fight every day. Thank you, Patrick. You know, it's important to have a vision and to have and to give people hope and trust. And look, if our customers didn't want to come in here, if they did not want to leave their houses, they wouldn't have done it.
Right. And what time is it right now? It's like 8 in the morning, just after 8.
8 in the morning.
We've already got some people rolling in.
Our business is up.
Yeah.
We didn't go down. It's gone up.
It's beautiful. I mean, it was super encouraging over winter and whatnot, you know, when we're all kind of like in our holes and just like kind of down, like what the hell's happening. It's super encouraging to see a place like this that I love to play being like pivoting and saying, you know what? No, like I do not accept the fact, you know, I'm not going to accept that. And we're going to change and we're going to make it roll. And the community appreciates that.
Some of it does. Not all of it. Yeah. And I learned that firsthand, but
what sort of opposition are you?
Well, first of all, I will say when this happened, I was going to let the employees decide. That was my first step. Do you want to work? Do you want to go home? I don't know what's going to happen. I can't predict the future.
Right.
You know, and I had people that went home and chose that path. And I had people that said, we're staying and fighting. And they chose that path. And so if I didn't have enough employees to operate, we would have closed. But
right.
We had plenty of employees to operate. And we opened the door the next day. We never closed, but the next day we opened for takeout. And it's like, what's going to happen?
Right.
And what happened was customers came in
and
they said, we're here. You know, this is part of our life. This is an important part of normalcy for us. We're going to live our life and we're going to be here. And I think a lot of businesses struggled with chasing the new shiny thing. You know, like, oh, my God, we've got to pivot. Now we got to be only takeout and we got to do online ordering and curbside pickup and put dividers in between tables and make it look like an episode of Dexter or something like that. You know, like, oh, my God, we have to get all of our seats outside or else we're never going to be able to.
Sure.
And again, I think everybody who owns a business has the opportunity to push an agenda. I choose not to.
Yeah.
I choose to let the customers tell me what they want, what they're comfortable with. Let the employees tell me what they want, right, what they're comfortable with. And it was an evolution for us. We first weekend, we pushed the button on, it was serendipitous. We had online ordering ready to go. Hadn't it go.
Yeah, yeah.
So we hit that. And that worked out well.
That's
and,
amazing.
You know, when they reopened indoor dining, I think it was June 15th, we just spaced out the tables. The town came to see us first to do inspections. They said, you guys always set the bar. We know you guys are just aces in this category. And, you know, customers came in and and we've just been on this sort of don't change things.
Right.
We have the sale set. What we have works. Our customers like it. So we really haven't reacted a lot to things. We've just pressed ahead.
Yeah.
And we don't tell people what to do. They're aware of what the rules are, what the guidelines are. We're not going to fight with people.
Right.
You know,
totally.
I'm not afraid of people.
Right.
And I'll knock on wood when I say this, but I'm very proud of it. So here's the wood. In the last 18 months, we've served over 200,000 customers.
That's amazing.
Not a single sick employee, single transmission event.
It's a beautiful thing, man.
And where I did get in trouble, to answer your question about the slice of the community that's not appreciative of this, and I was not aware of this, so this is actually a really good exercise for me. I had made a video about, COVID isn't closing these businesses. Fear is closing these businesses.
Exactly.
And we need to band together and save this downtown and save these businesses. And there are things that you can do. You have a responsibility. The government will not solve this for you.
Right.
And there was a really violent negative reaction in one sort of circle of social media. And again, at the time, I felt really like it hit me in my heart, you know, like, oh my God. And I realized, I learned a couple of things. One, there's a segment of the population that likes fear. They want to be told what to do.
They feed on it.
They want the government to tell them what to do. It relieves them, I think, of a lot of accountability and things like that. But that's okay. And then also, they're angry at people like me for continuing to operate. They blame me for killing their grandparents.
Interesting.
I've had direct emails of people blaming me that we've never been to flight. My grandparents have never been to flight, but I blame you directly for their death.
Interesting.
And so it was really interesting
That's just fear kind of lashing out
Absolutely.
At something for no reason other than.
So I give them love because that's what everybody needs. That's all I can do. But I learned that there's a segment of the population that doesn't appreciate what we do. Now, the great news is they're hiding at their houses behind keyboards and they're not real. And so there was no backlash to my business. My business grew.
Right, right.
But
there's a lot of keyboard warriors out there.
Oh my God. You know.
It's rough, man. It's rough.
It's, but look, it goes back to this. When you can't, whether it's your own choice or whether it's reality, if you can't interact with humans, and we're such social beings and we're built on connections, and that's why I think coffee shops are just the most amazing things you can do, because coffee brings people together. All of these things bring people together.
I think when coffee first came out somewhere in the Middle East, the government tried to like ban it, right?
Yeah.
Because it was like making people too communal, too socially aware.
I think there was something in New York that they were worried that they would go after coffee shops because people were still getting together and talking.
Oh no.
You know, we provide an experience. We provide the ability for people to connect. We happen to have award-winning coffee. We happen to have, you know, ridiculous vegan scratch-made food in the back that'll blow people's heads off.
But, yeah, it looks delicious.
But the whole point is come hang, you know, and come live your life and connect and talk. There was a moment that literally brought me to tears. It was about 3 weeks into this pandemic and still it was takeout only. And it was really kind of eerie. You know, people were coming in. They weren't really talking to each other.
Surreal.
And one woman was in here getting her chai, and another woman walked in, and they saw each other, and they cried, and they hugged.
Oh, man.
And they were so happy to see each other. They hadn't seen each other. They were like good friends. And
yeah.
To have that moment happen here, I was like, we need to continue to do this.
Yes.
At all costs.
Yes.
So at a profit, great. At a loss, great. At all costs, this is what we need to do.
Yeah.
And the transition, I mean, I feel like that's what happened with live music.
Right.
No one's going to tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, Kelly, it's okay. Do live music again. Like, no one's going to do that.
Right.
I watched all of these businesses, these venues struggle. The Brick House ripped out the stage.
Right.
It's over. Kidding. Yeah, no, live music is done. They put in two golf simulators.
Woof.
So woof. I would have loved to play that stage one last time.
Right. We've played that stage together.
I know. I'm a Ram. Yeah. There's video of that. There's evidence of that.
Definitely me playing out of key at one section, too. I was definitely nervous to sit in with you guys.
But I see this, and I've had an opinion on sort of the economics and the business side of live music for a long time, and I'm kind of operating that here in a little micro situation with a small venue. But to see these venues close, these are stages that'll never be played on. These are connections that'll never happen again. These are experiences that'll never happen again.
Right.
And I felt like my role is actually more important now than it was before.
Sure.
And so, you know, as data, you know, I'm a data guy, you know, and so technically at the time that cases are rising, I'm like, this is the time to open live music.
Right. Well, it's, you know, I'm not trying to, I'm just checking the thing, just make sure we're still rolling. Everything looks beautiful. We'll get the background noise of everyone getting their coffee, eating their scones. And it's just like, you think about what we accept on a day-to-day basis, like we drive in our cars at super fast speeds and we die in our cars every day. People are getting just, you know, people are dying.
Yeah.
And it, we completely accept that risk as part of it. So why should we live in fear if we can go about continuing a community, living safely in an being aware of the situation and operating it in a safe way?
Mike, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to do some live math here at the risk of doing live math on a podcast.
I've been reading this book called The Secrets to Mental Math. I only got into chapter one so far.
So in Dover today, I'm a data person. So in Dover today, so we're sitting in Dover, there's 61 people that are sick.
Yep.
State of New Hampshire is one of the only states that talks about active cases, not cumulative cases.
Right.
I actually sat at this table with Chris Sununu for an hour in November and we chatted about that. So today in Dover, 99.8% of Dover does not have the sickness. Right. Now there's long-term care facilities. There's a jail in Dover. I don't know how many of these are institutional, these 61 cases, but what is the safe number? I mean, if 99.8 isn't safe, what is the safe number?
Right.
Is it 99.81, 82? Like at what point do we reclaim our lives and go back to living?
It's a good question. I think that more people should be vaccinated. I think that would be good. If we can get more people on the vaccination train, that would be good.
It's happening. You know?
It's happening.
It's and we feel it here. You know, I see people that I haven't seen in a year and a half, and it's because they're vaccinated. And I think I'm not here to debate the effectiveness of any of the vaccines, but it gives people hope.
Yeah, totally.
And giving people hope is something I think a lot of people needed.
Right.
And so hope comes confidence, then they can chase their dreams.
Sure.
And they can reacclimate to society, because the sooner the better, man. Some people have lost their ability to interact, lost a lot of social skills.
Oh, man.
In the past year.
I think I feel horrible for the kids, for the really young kids. I teach, you know, I've been teaching this whole time, you know, on Zoom. And now I go in 2 days a week, 3 days a week. I teach 6 days a week, but I've been going into this place I work at three. Teach a lot online still, but people still come in. We do our lessons with masks and stuff like that. And these, you know, these poor kids who need to get their energy out and they haven't been able to, and they've been put in this path or whatever, you know, because of the situation. And you can see that they're just completely miserable in that they can't focus. They all of a sudden don't like to play the instrument anymore, and we were doing great. And it's like all this stress is built up on them. It's going to be fine. They're going to bounce back. You know, kids are resilient, but it's hard to see.
I've got a 12-year-old daughter who, I mean, junior high is the time you're supposed to go and get, you know, made fun of and kicked around in school and stuff and build character. And she was at home on Zoom and broke my heart. But, you know, we've done everything we could do to keep her in sports, playing with friends, you know, cohorts, being as social as possible to get her through this.
Right.
But there's no question it's taken a toll on her. But to that point, I think musicians in general, or specifically, have had a harder time, because I've always thought this. Most musicians, and I'm going to generalize here just for fun.
You're a musician, so you can,
I'm a musician,
you can do
so
this.
I'm in this category, kind of. Musicians typically have a hard time expressing themselves in words to people and in communication,
sure.
right? In you know, interpersonal skills. So music is an outlet, and it allows them to express themselves yep. at a deeper level that they would never do right. any other way. And so that is their way of communicating. That's their way of sharing. That's their way of not keeping those emotions bottled up.
Sure.
It's their outlet, and it's important to their lives. And so when they lost that ability
yeah.
to have that meaningful sharing and those meaningful connections,
right.
Does it translate over Zoom? Does it translate over live stream? Now, I think it helped pay the bills, which is great. And I think it helped keep them active and give them hope and give them something to work right. towards. I say them now, I'm not saying me, because I'm not actively playing music right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that people, Tim Terrio, I watched him right away, had like hundreds of people
good,
on his live stream, you know, and I was like, this is, brought a tear to my eye. I'm like, this is great that yeah. people are pivoting
totally.
And they're watching and they're contributing. Imagine if he was out there and there was one person on the live stream.
Right.
I mean, you and I have right. played to empty rooms before.
Right.
Imagine doing an empty live stream.
I mean, I think,
at your
I
house.
Think that's the thing. I think people are doing that.
Yeah.
You know, but there's also success stories with apps like Twitch.
Yes.
Where musicians are completely, you know, making, you know, great money doing their thing.
I think it's wonderful.
I do too. I think it's fantastic. It's a totally different beast. It's a different animal than playing a live show and saying this is an experience you come to physically and you're with other people. It's totally different, in my opinion. You know, it's an evolution. It's in a sense, but it's also, you know, it's not even just an evolution. It's just a different take, I think.
And I think it's a valuable tool.
But is it the be all end all? Is it the future? Is it?
I'm here to tell you it's not.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, after 18 months of Zoom, and right. I contributed to as many of these live streams as I could because,
right.
I support live music. It's,
yeah.
it's a bill I'm happy to have. You know, it's
sure.
an expense I'm happy to have. But we kicked off live music on April 9th. David Corson.
Oh yeah, I know David.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he was actually the one who got his show got canceled because of the pandemic, so we put him back up first.
Interesting.
And I had met with him.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. And there, I gotcha.
Yeah, and I had met with him maybe a month or two before we started music, just to get his opinion. Like, can we do this? Are mm-hmm. you ready to do this? Mm-hmm. Do you want to do this? Do you think people will come out? He was really excited and bullish, and so that's all cool. But within 30 seconds of him playing, it was clear there is no substitute for the direct interaction between
yeah.
a musician and their friends and fans.
Right.
And we are focused on that celebration, those moments that happen when, I mean, this is a listening room kind of only. There's nothing, there's no pool tables.
That's why
there's
we love playing here, man. That's
there's
why
no
we're like,
TVs.
Right.
You know, there's nobody's here trying to hook up. Like,
right.
they're here for you.
That's exactly, and this is like exactly what I've been saying to my friends after we play
yeah.
at Flight. And that this is the first time you've said that to me.
Yep.
But it's exactly why I'm like, guys, we need to play. Like, did you notice that everyone was just sitting here, eyes are on us, smiles on faces. They're having an experience.
Yeah.
Like, this is the music experience that I've always wanted to give. I'm so sick of going to a club and having some dude puke on his shoes and and tell me to play Freebird. You know, like.
Do they still actually request Freebird?
Oh, dude, I'm going to take off my sixth string. And I'm going to choke him out on the side of the stage. Not that I'm a violent person. Sorry, people eating your breakfast. But yeah, no. It's just I spiral into darkness.
Well, let me tell you one story, if I may. Tiffany Colston.
Yes.
Absolute powerhouse, talented human being, wonderful motivator, educator, performer, unbelievable person. She ran a music studio here in Dover called Musical Arts of Dover. And
mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends that were going to shall be unnamed music studio in Portsmouth, which has wonderful musicians and just a really great,
mm-hmm.
really great mission. And then she's over there, like all herself doing, you know, dance, music, everything. And what I saw about the students, because they all kind of come here for the open mics and perform, her students had this confidence and passion
yeah.
that came through what they were doing far and above everybody else. There was a very academic approach from other schools, very
sure.
like calculated and
mm-hmm.
controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, so I had to meet this woman.
Yeah.
You know, I had to meet her. And so we got together and I had her whole crew in for they did a recital here and I really got to know her. And I said, Tiff, you know, you're an amazing performer. Like she's performing in Boston. She was, I think, you know, Berkeley, all that stuff, but she
yeah.
was performing these massive GB gigs.
Yeah.
You know, making $4,000-$6,000, just heavy weddings, everything.
Sure.
And I said, Tiff, you got to perform here. You ever performed in your own community? And she's like, no.
Wow.
And she's like, okay, I'm game. And she's like, I'll get my band together from Boston. I'm going to get my guys and we're going to do tickets. We're going to do $20 tickets. I'm like, nobody's paying $20, but let's try it, you know? Yeah. And I'll never forget this night. And there's video of it out there. You can go find it. Tiffany Colston playing at Flight is a 3-minute video. I'm so glad this night was documented. But we opened the doors. I'm doorman now, you know?
Yeah.
And we opened the doors and everybody came up from Boston. People flew in from Colorado. All her friends and family came. I mean, there were music professionals, dance professionals. I mean, and this did not look like Dover.
Right,
you know,
right,
it looked
right,
like
right.
Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pictures are unbelievable. Anyway, she gets up and performs as if she's performing, you know, at the Apollo.
Yeah.
Right? Dressed the part. The lights are bumping. The band is sick.
Yeah.
You just hired killers, right?
Yeah.
Videographer, you know, there's a cake after party, everything. She has her performance. At the end of the night, you know, we've all packed up and she comes to me and she says, and I'm going to paraphrase here, I don't remember the exact words, but she's like, this was the most amazing thing I've ever done.
That's awesome.
And I said, what do you mean? What do you mean, Tiff? There was like, you know, 45 people here, 50 people here. She goes, everything that I do, I've been out doing shows, pouring my heart out to people who are eating steak and who are talking to each other and aren't focused on anything I'm doing. I'm almost like background or sometimes even an annoyance.
Right.
And I'm pouring my heart out. And
right.
tonight in this room was the first time I ever did that with my family and friends.
Unbelievable, man.
And she goes, this changed my life.
Unbelievable.
And for someone that accomplished, right?
I know.
To have that moment here, it was a real eye opener for me that like, this is what we do. This is why we do this.
Right.
That's my paycheck.
Right.
That's a life change. That's a perspective change.
Right.
She will never forget that. So when I think of these kids that come in here and play, because we typically focus on younger bands, younger, not maybe in terms of age, but also in terms of like, you know, a newer band.
Sure.
Right? They have those moments every time, every show where they finish a song. Maybe they took a risk. Maybe it's their first song. Maybe it's their first, I don't know. And the place blows up and they feel it and it's right there. And the same thing that you said, all eyes are on them.
Right.
Paul Jarvis was in here a couple weeks ago and you know, he's got this beautiful crowd. Dude's in Scissor Fight.
Right.
Right. I mean, you've seen a Scissor Fight show.
Oh yeah.
Raging madness.
Totally.
You know, and it's him with a bass guitar. Burnsy over there. He was sitting right up front.
Nice.
Right? And it's him with a bass guitar and he's kind of a storyteller too.
Yeah.
Right? And it's so quiet. He's like, oh my God, it's so quiet. But by the time he gets to the stage, because we'd had interactions with him, by the time he gets to play, he's like, this place is magic. He's like, the people here are wonderful.
Yeah.
They're in this for a reason that I've never even thought of, you know?
Sure.
And he's like, we're doing something special here. And he felt it and he had that moment. And, he had, after all the shows he has, after all the feedback, after all the passion he feels from the crowds, he had a moment here, which is, I'm actually connecting live, having conversations with, engaging with my friends, my family, my fans in a way I've never done it before.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And that is magic to me.
And that's what it's all about, man. Ugh. That is magic.
I think, you know, the number one reason I bought this place 4 years ago was to do all ages live music. And I'll tell you why. You've seen some of this. You've been a part of some of this. I got this kid, Jackson, you know.
And, hell of a musician, dude.
When he was 2 years old, I put him on my shoulders. We went to see the Allman Brothers at Great Woods. We grilled out in the parking lot and went in. And, you know, even before then, you know, we spent a lot of time in the car. I remember making him these little CDs. Color-coded CDs, you know, one's Miles Davis, one's Michael Jackson, The Police, Jimi Hendrix, right? Real music.
Yeah.
And he knew it by colors, but we'd spend time in the car listening to the Government Mule and Allman Brothers, and we played at the Stone Church with O'Teal, right?
Yeah.
Remember the O'Teal?
Oh, that show?
Yeah. Jackson gets to meet O'Teal, and I'm like, he's in the Allman Brothers, dude, that we just saw the other day. Jackson's, what, 5 years old,
That's
four
awesome.
Years old? And I was always really impressed. You get to see us play with Eddie Money at the
at the
ballroom. I walked off the stage and handed him my sticks. You know, he's like 5 years old and his mind's blown, right?
Yeah.
And
that's incredible.
There's so many, I got to thank Rex. I got to thank the Stone Church. I got to thank everybody for always letting him in, because it's always, you know, before we play a show, like, hey, is it okay if someone brings my son? He's like five, six, seven. They're like, yeah, man, as long as he's with an adult. I'm like, of course he's with an adult. But so we're going to put X's on his hand. I'm like, yeah, if you're going to confuse him with like a 20, you know. Yeah. But anyway, I really appreciated that. But my goal was to expose Jackson to real music.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he had talent. He was playing drums at two with a diaper. He was playing beats.
Yeah,
I can't push him, but I can expose him.
Exactly.
And I wanted him to see what I was doing, because if you can see what's possible, then you then it's just natural for you to expect that you can do all
it's,
that, right?
It's our natural tendency, right, to explore what our potential is.
I brought him to see Fire in the Field.
Yeah,
outside at, I think in Stratum, right?
Oh yeah, Stratum Hill, Stratum Hill
yes.
Park.
Yes,
that was one. Yeah, man, that was a long.
So
time
he was always in tow, and. But you know what? Like, those bars aren't the right place for kids.
Mm-hmm.
At 10:30 at night, you know, when people are drunk and bumping into each other, it's not the right environment for him to kind of be. And I wanted to do something all ages.
Yeah.
And so when I saw this room, I said, "This is the kind of place I want."
So was your first thought music and then coffee?
Well, it was a coffee business that had already been opened. It was open for 2 or 3 months when I got here.
Sure.
It was going out of business rapidly.
Right. I don't even remember the place before it, not to, you know, be that guy, but that's interesting.
It was going out of business rapidly, and I reached out to the owner, and I just said, I'm interested in talking. I always look for spectacular ways to lose money. You got to live, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about is being able to take the right risks, right? I mean.
I had a vision, and I didn't know, I've never worked, you know, I didn't know about restaurants. I didn't know about. I didn't even know we had a kitchen, to be honest with you. I didn't know we had like people back there cooking shit. Like, it was a really quick thing that happened. But my wife and I decided to make a bet, and we would try something community-based. And I said, I want to do all-ages live music. So anyway, Jackson helped me kind of conceive of the music program. And he's like, it's going to be younger bands, but also more experienced bands. I think you may have been on a bill with a younger band. And that was it for me. It was give kids the opportunity not only to come to a place that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We do beer and wine, but we're not a bar.
Right.
Shows are 7 to 9. No one's getting loaded at 7 o'clock.
Right.
And it's point of sale. So we don't, you know, these kids aren't going to be sitting, you know, covered in beer.
Totally.
Everybody's really respectful. But an environment that their parents would feel comfortable either bringing them or dropping them off.
Sure.
And letting them have that. And then letting them see super talented bands. I mean, you guys, Fire in the Field, Electric Market. I mean, these are world-class jazz musicians that kids can come and see and meet and talk to.
Yeah.
And then also share the stage with, share the bill with.
Right.
And so you've got, you know, John McCormick, and you've got this high school kid who, you know, this is his first or second show. He's just progressed from open mics. Now he's got a band. And he's on the bill with Paintbox or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he idolizes these people.
Yeah.
It's a sick band.
I mean, dude, that's what you're talking about. That relationship is literally what propelled me in my entire career focus was the fact that, you know, well, luckily I knew Jeff from high school, Jeff Taylor.
Yeah.
And because he saw whatever he saw in me and was like, you guys need to play with one hand free. Here's how we do shit.
Yeah.
Here's what's going on. I mean, that's it, man.
It's the on-ramp, right?
That's it. It's the on-ramp, but it's not even an on-ramp. It's a fucking launching pad.
Well, it is if you take advantage of it. And so you've got, like, you know, Jackson's a kid and John McCormick's, hey, dude, that Supro amp's amazing, man. Like, can I come over and play it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's this Jackson, like, John McCormick's coming over to try this amp. Like, what's going on? You know, and he's on cloud nine.
Yeah.
He progresses. So he starts playing here. He progresses from like doing some open mics with his friends, screwing around, and puts together a band, to puts together a different band that has intent and purpose, that he's writing songs, he's singing, and he now can command an audience.
Yep.
So he goes off to UVM his freshman year, and this kid knows how to put together a project with purpose,
right?
How to speak to a club owner and get a gig,
right?
How to command an audience and engage them, and how to put on a show. And how to make a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I want to show you something. And he finds himself, you know, in out of my, I'll never find this text, but.
And
I'm
it's not like when you talk to him, he's like this, like, tough guy, egotistical dude. Like, he's not, he's a real grounded human being. Yes. You can have a conversation with him. He's a solid, solid guy.
But this place is, he is evidence that this works.
Right.
That you, that this is a,
right,
a place where you can build music in your DNA.
Yeah.
And get something from it and leave something back to it.
Yes.
Marvel Prone's a great band who they started to me as a really young band. And I remember they were here watching Jackson play one night. He's like, we're going to get these guys to open for us when our album release happens.
That's
now,
awesome.
COVID blew it all up. But like people like Rainer, who's, I love Rainer, amazing human being. He cares about the next generation. He's, he's not far from being the next generation. He's a young kid, but that's what this is all about. It's like, great, so you've learned how to play, you've learned how to be a professional musician, you've learned how to put on a good show, now bring up the next generation, inspire them, connect with them, and bring it up. And tapping the wonderful music scene we have here, people like John McCormick, Tim McCoy, who are willing to do that and know the importance of that, it's just unbelievable.
It is, man. And as a music teacher, I mean, seeing that firsthand has been completely life-transforming.
Yeah.
You know, being able to pass on some knowledge and get somebody inspired about what music can really do is the greatest thing I've ever done, I think. You know? Crazy.
Now, I don't think, you know, again, we have very specific intent with our music program. It's not for everybody.
Sure.
Again, I told you, my number one focus is creating the moments of celebration between the artists and the fans and friends and family. That's it. Second is building a community in the next generation of live musicians and performers. It's not about the biggest shows. It's not about the best shows. It's not about the most money. I try really hard to get money for people. You know,
well, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty unique model. After, you know, you have however many bands are on the bill. I mean, you, every time, I mean, you're usually at every show for the most part. And Kelly comes up with the
plastic pig.
The plastic pig. I saw it in the back. It's still there when I went to use the restroom. And yeah, so he'll come up and he, you do the speech and you kind of just give it to him straight. And you're like, listen, here's the deal. And that's amazing because in this business, in the art world in general, everything can just be so, I mean, maybe it's not just the art world, but there's a specific sickness, I think, that's here because everybody wants attention. Everyone wants to be loved for their talent. And you leave yourself open and exposed to being fucked over by assholes.
Dude, I mean, so I'll take let me take a minute and give you another sort of backing of our philosophy. I've told you about why we do live music, but intently how we treat artists.
Yeah.
And there's a place in Lindenville, Vermont called Gumby's. Snap and Gomez used to play there, and it's a 3-hour drive, and it was always snowing.
And Snap and Gomez was the band you played in with Josh, right?
Yes.
Before.
Yeah. Kind of a great jam band and a lot of fun. Anyway, we would drive up to this bar, and it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's a college there, but it's just a dive bar. And what was really interesting was he made us feel like we were in his house.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, I love you guys. And, how'd you even hear of us? You know, but we felt like kind of rock stars because he's like, he called us, you know. And we get up there and, you know, the pot of food's on and he's going to feed us and we play our show. And there's like 30 people. There's nobody there, you know. So I remember playing a show. There was like 5 people.
Yeah.
And he had a guy. I remember this guy's name, but they had a room in the back with a little fan in the wall. And this guy would go back there and roll joints with one hand.
Oh, amazing.
And then get you as high as balls before you played. So you'd go out and you're just having the best experience, right? So you'd go out, get fed. You're like, how did we get drawn here? You play for 8 people.
Right.
And at the end of the night, he'd give you like $300. Right. And you'd be like, how do we make this money? You know? And he's like, oh man, people made donations. It was great. Like they loved you, man. You guys were fantastic. Now I learned, because I'm inquisitive, I learned that Gumby was a guy who was basically a ski bum and he got run over by an Arctic cat. Snow groomer, and he got a big settlement.
Yeah,
and he was like, "Fuck it, I'm buying a bar."
Yeah,
and he bought a bar and a house, and that was his. He just like, I just want to have a place that play with where people, my friends can come, and where musicians can feel respected.
Yeah,
and so he was using his situation, his resources to kind of create that environment. It was intentional.
It's amazing.
Now, that stuck with me.
Yeah,
and so I want people to play here. I want them to feel like $1 million. I want when you walk in the room, you feel respected. Understood, you know, when I have people like, you remember Morgan who did the sound, she understood performers at the performer level.
Sure.
You know, you're gonna have to find a way to engage with them. It might not be the way you expect, but you have to read them,
right,
understand each individual, but you want to draw out of them what's gonna make you happy tonight. How can we make this show great for you? How can we you guys sound amazing. Truth is, people do sound amazing. It's a nice sound, yeah, system. People do, but make them feel like $1 million. Make them feel comfortable, like you're in our house. And when they leave, make sure there's more money in that pig than they thought ever possible.
Right.
Because everybody's scared. Everybody's like, nah, man, we need a guarantee. Nah, man, we want to do door.
Right.
It's like, no, trust me.
Right.
We're going to leave the door open. Everybody comes in. I'm gonna make a speech. Trust me.
Yeah.
You're going to make money.
Yeah.
And some people don't want to take that risk. And it's like, okay.
Right.
That's cool.
And what ends up happening is you play. Not, I would play for as long as anybody wants me to play, because I'm kind of a whore like that. But, you know, what ends up happening is you play for an hour and you get paid more money per member than playing wherever down, yeah, the street for 2 hours,
yep,
you know? Not that it's about time and all that. Not that we're doing this to make
money's
money.
Part of the experience.
But it's like...
It's the reward. It's part of the reward.
It's part of it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, you know, guitars are not free, you know? Just because we're... you know, wielding the sonic alchemy that is music, it doesn't mean that, like, we don't fucking fly here on, you know, on our brooms. Like, we have cars, you know.
They take gas. There's tolls. We got parking tickets.
Right.
I got towed.
But, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it's amazing what happens when you find a place like this where you actually feel like you're wanted there.
Yeah.
The number of places that you go play where you're like, wait, why do I feel like an asshole?
Dude, like, no relationship with the doorman. He hates you.
Right.
The bartenders hate you
because, right,
you're fucking loud. They only care about, am I going to make $100 tonight in tips or $200, right, bucks tonight in tips? They're angry if nobody's there.
Right. They're getting paid shit anyways.
So I think you have to take the economics of live music and look at it a little bit differently. Right.
Yeah.
I have my eye on the Strand, mm-hmm, right? I've always had my eye on the Strand. I'm going to wait till this guy does a bunch of upgrades and I'm going to see if I can get it. But here's the thing. The economics of live music only is, and we see it today, it,
yep,
doesn't exist.
Yep.
Right? I mean, maybe at big shows, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people, maybe. But like clubs, it doesn't exist. You're selling beer.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
You need to have a venue, and there needs to be a financial vehicle that supports the venue. The people that are doing the show, so the sound person needs to be paid and doesn't need to be worried about anything, unencumbered by,
right,
the success of the night financially.
Right. Wait, you mean sound actually matters?
Yes, it matters.
Oh, shit.
Well, I'm so lucky. So Jackson is going to come back this summer and run sound for a flight.
Yeah.
And Andrew May is going to train him.
That's amazing.
Andrew May is the most amazing human being.
It's like having Gandalf teach you how to,
dude,
be a wizard. What the fuck?
Because I've kind of shared with him what we're doing and why, and he cares.
Right.
And he's like, I'll train whoever it is.
Right.
And so Jackson's going to get trained by Bob Dylan's front of house sound guy. So, yeah, we're going to have good sound in the little coffee shop.
Right.
You know, it'll be good. It'll sound great. But so the economics, I want the team unencumbered by the success of the night. I want the business unencumbered by the success of the night financially. I want every dollar to go to the musician.
Yeah.
I cover the Eventbrite fees if we do tickets. I'll eat those. I'll eat everything. We'll give it all to you. I'll eat the credit card. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But if you have that situation where the business has made its money and it doesn't need to make a profit that night,
right,
then everything can be about the performance and about the musician and about,
right,
the band and about the night and the audience. And so I feel like we sell a hell of a lot of bagels here.
Yeah, and they're good bagels.
And a lot of coffee and a lot of food. And we've made our money during the day. We close at 2. When we open up for these events, we've already made our money. So it's an investment that we can make in the community in this process. So if I was going to run the Strand or something like that, I would go get a bunch of my rich friends and build an endowment that pops off 5%, 6%, maybe gives them 1 or 2 a year, something like that. But they're doing it for the right reasons. I'll sell it, trust me. And that little fountain of money will support the Strand and keep all the bills paid. So you're not desperate. You're not asking people for money. And you can just put on shows.
Right.
And you could afford to invest in the band that's going to bring 5 people.
Yep.
And have the whole theater and 5 people. They'll have the best time of their life. It doesn't
matter.
It's
an incredible model.
That's the model that I think needs to happen with live music. And
sure.
I'm proving it out here.
It's honestly like what you're doing with the economics is similar to what happens in live shows, not to get too heady and philosophical, sure. but what you're doing when you're playing the live music is you're throwing that energy out and people are taking it and something's happening and they're throwing it back at you and it becomes this cycle, right? And you're just kind of talking about taking that idea almost, this very human
yes.
thing,
yeah.
and putting that into an economic form.
Yes.
In terms, that's incredible.
I'm doing it here. I'm not wealthy, right? But I do flight for free.
Right.
Because of everything that happens and this ecosystem that we built, right. this community that we built, there's so much value. There's so much reward from seeing it happen and being a part of it, being a part of people's lives. I know her, you know, she did an art show here. She lived out back and was here every day. Didn't believe she was an artist.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to do an art show. I don't even, no one will come. We've been an art show. She put all her stuff, worked so hard to get all her art. Place was packed.
It's amazing.
And she's like tears. Like, I can do this. Now she's a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
You know,
she believes in herself now.
She believes in herself. Right.
It's incredible.
And so those are the things, man. That's what's worth it. That's the paycheck.
Right.
Now I know there are guys out there and girls out there with way more resources than I have that want to be part of something special, that want to do good.
Right.
And I think to bring it full circle in the last 18 months,
yeah,
people are really reevaluating why do I have this money? Why do I have this wealth? Why do I have these resources or this opportunity? What do I do with it?
Right.
And I think, to your point, there's a section of that group that wants to be part of something special and be part mm-hmm. of something that's magic. And that's how theaters ought to be run.
Yep.
With endowments full of wonderful humans that want to invest.
Right.
They'll get their money back later.
Yeah.
There'll be a reward, but the reward is they know they can walk in that door and see what's happening,
right.
and be like, I did this.
Yeah.
I made this happen. And
what's on stage is actually amazing.
Trust me, that's the best paycheck you'll ever get.
It's incredible. Yeah. So how can like folks get involved? Like, can artists reach out to you if they want to have a showing?
And this is also a fun kind of conversation. the best part of this is saying yes to bands and giving them that show. The worst part of it is saying no to musicians and not giving them that show. Or it's a conditional no, it's a not right now or something like that.
Right.
FlightRockCity@gmail.com. That's sort of the address that we use for booking.
Yep.
FlightRockCity@gmail.com. And then we respond with our strategy, our vibe, what we do. And we really try to have that be a qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Booking shows is tough, dude.
It is.
I have hundreds of emails I haven't even opened.
Yeah, I believe it.
And I think, again, we serve a very specific part of the market. And the hardest part for me is these uber talented cover artists.
Yeah.
Who are used to playing at a restaurant
for 3 hours
or a hotel, you know.
Yep.
Couple $100 in the corner for 2 hours, whatever. Right. They might sneak in an original,
right.
you know, hope
right.
nobody notices.
Right.
But that doesn't work here.
No.
And I've tried it because I wanted to see if it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought in one of the most talented cover artists you could find, and he played to one person.
Oh, man.
Because nobody comes out for that.
Right.
It's great in that environment, and there's right. plenty of venues for that, and it's an art all by itself.
Sure.
I mean, look at fucking Tim Terrio.
Yeah, he's
one
amazing.
Of the most talented so dudes good. In the area, and he kills it. I remember I was in Kennebunkport last summer, and I'm like, you know, eating a lobster roll at the boathouse, and I'm like, that's fucking Tim Terrio. I can tell you that's Tim Terrio. He's got to be over at Federal Jacks or something like that.
Kick-ass.
You know, and it's amazing, and people love it because they're hearing things that are familiar to them,
sure.
and it just facilitates the good time and all that stuff.
And knowing how to, he's not just there, just like, I learned the cover exactly how it's played. Like he's like Mercury in the moment. He's molding it to the environment around him.
He might be the only one that would work here doing his gig because people love him so much and he's a local hero. But a lot of musicians read what we say our strategy is and they don't understand it.
Yeah.
They want, you know,
hey,
we do two sets for $400.
Interesting.
Great classic rock covers. You guys will love us.
Sure.
Your fans, your customers will love us. I'm like, did you read? Because I sent you exactly what we do. Did you read it?
So are you saying that you're mad at me for asking how people get booked on this podcast because you're going to get more fucking emails?
No, I don't mind the emails because it's an opportunity to engage, right? And for me, it's validation that people want to play.
Right.
I mean, I told my wife, I was like, no one's going to tap me on the shoulder and say, do live music. So I'm going to do it.
Right.
I'm just going to set a date in the sand.
Right.
I'm going to kick over two Instagram posts. I'm going to say, we're going to do live music again.
Yep.
Reach out. And floodgates opened.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it wasn't all people that are going to work here, but we booked through the end of August, like in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And had to be very selective. Again, I'm thinking of the audiences, you know, I'm thinking of the people, I'm thinking of the performers. I want it to be a good experience for everybody. Mm-hmm. I also, as we're kind of easing out of, you know, well, some people consider lockdown. I haven't been locked down, but yeah. As we're easing out of this,
I mean,
I want to work up to having, you know, rock bands and full bands. And what does right. that feel like? But it was evidence that people wanted to play. And then we put the shows on sale. And I get choked up. I'm like it's like I'm watching Old Yeller, you know, all the time. Like I'm such a softy, but like the Balsam Fir sold out in the first day.
It's amazing. You know,
these are kids. They're wonderful kids. They're pissed that I'm calling them kids because they're not kids. You know,
right. They're yeah, I get it.
I'm old. They sold out the first day. And I was like, this is validation. And all the shows are selling out. They're all selling out before the shows. And this is validation that people want to come out. And I said, Cakes, I just literally kicked over two Instagram posts and the whole fucking live music program reboots. And here's the thing. I was sick and I didn't want to come to the David Corson show
because
I was sick and I didn't know if I was... I don't know if I was in a bad place or a good place.
Right.
And I was like, I can't cancel the show. Andrew May said, I'll come do sound. My wife said, I'll come host.
Yep.
And Shanna Banana said, I'll come do the first show. And I kind of like gave them all these notes. I'm in bed.
Yeah.
And I'm scared because I'm like, this is my thing.
Right.
How does this exist without me?
Right.
This is the first show. Like I'm rebooting this after 18 months.
That's a terrible feeling.
How does this happen? And I try to give them all the instructions I can and try to impart the passion and the love that needs to go with this. It was exactly what it needed to be. It was as perfect as it possibly could have been. And it reminded me, you've built this, right? And this lives without you. Other people can take what you've built. You've built this vibe. You've built this love in this room. Other people can do this.
Well, because you know how to communicate, you know how to delegate to the people.
And trust.
And trust.
And power.
Obviously, you're hiring the right cats to do the job.
Yep.
Andrew May is pretty good.
I was like, hey, David Corson, bad news is I'm not going to be at the show. Good news is Bob Dylan's sound guy will be your front of house sound guy. So it'll probably sound good. No problem, dude.
That's the best. That's the fucking best, man. Yeah, I remember he did sound for our show at Bill's Bar and our release show in 2009. The sound guy was definitely pissed. We're like, yeah, we got Andrew May to do this. And he was just like, whatever. You know, it's funny, man. It's a strange world out there.
It's a strange world, but it's a beautiful time to be alive. I'll tell you, as a person who, I told you, 200,000 customers in the last year, I've been here every day.
Yeah.
I know my customers. I talk to people all day. I sit here every day and talk to customers. I see so much good happening around me.
Totally.
I'm done with the TV. I'm done with media.
That's it's just so bad.
It's so bad. There's nothing good there. But when I gave that up and sort of decided to say, I'm going to just live and take my cues from my community.
Right.
And see what's happening in real life.
Sure.
You know, and so much good. It's a beautiful time to be alive. I'm thankful for being a part of the community, doing something that I think is valuable and needed. And again, I have evidence that it changes people's lives. It changes musicians' lives. It changes their perspective. People have moments that they wouldn't have anywhere else. And I'm so lucky.
Have. Yeah. I feel lucky to have been playing here. And it's been an honor to talk to you about this whole place, man.
I appreciate you coming to see me.
Dude, this has been a blast. Flight Coffee, ladies and gentlemen. Dover, New Hampshire. This is Mike with Mike in the Field, sitting with guest Kelly Bauer, owner, musician, dear friend. Thank you, sir.
Absolute pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you on the next one. Peace.